Houston standing by, over.
Jeremy and Joe continues now
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Rahill in for Joe today. Jeremy and Rahill from ESPN 97.5, 97.9 HD2. All right, most important man in Texans history that isn't getting into
the party. All right. I heard you doing the face of the franchise.
Yeah. I haven't done it yet.
Oh, you didn't do it? I thought you teased that.
No, we haven't.
Did you put on Twitter?
Teased it. We just didn't do it.
I'm ADHD.
Okay.
Well, I did ask on Twitter, though, yeah.
Okay, maybe we can do that
in
the 5 o'clock. You like that? A little 5 o'clock tease?
Power hour.
Coming in here and teasing the 5
Don't
o'clock
they have
Friday.
Power hour on 5 o'clock?
Oh, it's 5 o'clock fire.
5 o'clock fire.
Oh, yeah. You got to have some.
I used to do that a little bit.
Okay.
All right, so most important man.
Most important man. First, before I give you the answer, who is the most important man in Texans history?
Texans history?
Texans history.
I would say Bob McNair.
Same.
Okay. Beyond the owner now. Let's go to football operations. Let's go to football side. I'll even throw in the marketing guy. Toro is not eligible.
Although that was my answer.
Is Toro a man?
Sex, yeah.
Yeah.
I assumed his gender. That wasn't right.
Well, if
my
if
bad, Toro.
If it's not Toro, I guess I'd have to say Jack Easterby.
Okay.
Some people would say.
I would say Jack Easterby is the most important man. You guys
okay.
got it.
One fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish.
Interesting.
I'm not even being sarcastic. I don't like Jack Easterby, what he did here. Without Jack Easterby, there is no Nick Caserio. This goes back to 2019. Jack Easterby went to the Patriots championship parade and started fiddling around. Actually got in trouble for tampering.
Yeah.
Trying to get Nick Caserio over. It didn't work out. Brian Gain got fired. Do you remember that? Brian Gain had a pretty successful year going into that offseason. We're like, okay, everything is set. And then Brian Gain was let go out of nowhere.
He was.
Nick Caserio doesn't come to the Houston Texans. B.O.B. takes over. We know what happened after that.
You always come in here with these down questions.
Nicely done. And then in 2021, guess who signed here? After Bill O'Brien was gone, there was one man left. Jack Easterby brought over.
Caserio.
Nick Caserio.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
The rest is history.
Yeah.
Jack Easterby was let go in 2022.
Yeah.
He is the most important man. He is the linchpin to this success that we have right now. This incredible run of greatness. Like, this team feels different. This isn't a Bill O'Brien team where they make the playoffs, AFC South champions again, Brian, all that stuff. And you're like, what are you really going to do? I get it. We're going to find out on Sunday, like, how good is this team? But don't you feel better in terms of the future of this team now than you did during the Bill O'Brien years?
Oh, for sure.
And it's all because of
Nick Caserio.
Shout out to the fish.
I would say it was Caserio.
Nick Caserio. And so without him.
Why wouldn't Caserio be more important than Easterby?
Because there is no Nick Caserio here without Jack Easterby.
Okay.
I don't think Casario's here. I don't think without Jack Easterby laying that groundwork, going in there and doing his thing as, what was his role? Football?
He had a bunch of different ones in a short period of time.
Yeah, I think he was like president of football ops or something at one point.
I used to work at Highway to Hell, 610 a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember whenever they hired Easterby, I was like, they're giving this chaplain way too much power. Like, he should have no football power. Mm-hmm. And they reprimanded me. Like, you can't say that about him.
Did you really get in trouble
for that?
I got in trouble
twice over there for ripping on the Texans. I wasn't even ripping on the Texans.
That's
like, they're giving a chaplain too much power.
Yeah.
Anybody can see this.
What was the other side?
Who was the running back at Texas? That was Deontay Foreman.
Mm-hmm.
Deontay Foreman.
Yeah.
Whenever he recovered from his injury, remember they cut him, like, randomly? I think he, like, missed a plane or was late or something, and they cut him. I thought that he was, like, their second-best running back at the time, which I think he was. And I was like, they just cut their second-best running back.
And they're like, in trouble for that.
Yeah, like, you're not watching the game. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm pretty sure I was.
What?
Yeah, I got in trouble for that. They called me mid-segment on that one, actually. Mid-segment.
Armin?
I got called. Yeah. Mid-segment.
That feels like more like...
Mid-segment.
That definitely feels
I was like
more
that's
of
so
a...
tame.
They cut
their second-best running back. You can't say that.
Yeah, for them to call you mid-segment, that would be like they view it as an emergency. Like, we got a...
Mid-segment.
Squash this now.
He was very new to the station, though, so I think he was very, very like sensitive to like being critical of the Texans.
Yeah, I don't think the previous
AD
would have done that.
No, I don't think so. I don't think Armin would have done it a month later.
Maybe
Wait,
not.
Hold on. Do you think somebody from the Texans heard it and called Armin, or you think Armin just made the call?
I think
he's like, hey,
Armin was very new to the job.
Yeah, Armin's super nice guy.
Yeah, I like
super
Armin.
Nice guy.
He was very Brian. Do you like Armin?
No,
he was very.
This is way like inside Harvey. Baseball. Armin Williams.
Jeremy set me up for that because he already knew the answer.
Yeah, I knew the answer to that.
Anyway, he was the programming director at Sports Radio 610.
So he got hired and then like that call that he made to me was like a week after he was hired.
Oh, wow.
So I think he was very sensitive to the relationship between the station and the Texans.
You got made example. That's what it was.
I guess. I don't know.
Easier to call you than Rich?
Yeah. Rich wasn't there.
Rich would have never said something like that, though.
No, but Rich wasn't.
I was like, man. I was like,
whoa, hey.
Like, I'm pretty sure that he's better than, like, I don't even remember
who would have been the third string guy.
Pretty sure he's better than Alfred Blue.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think Alfred Blue was around then. I think it was after Alfred Blue.
But he was better than Alfred Blue.
Yeah. What year was that?
I can't remember when he got cut. It'd be easy to find out.
Armin got hired in 2019, so it would have had to be that year.
19?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do
you agree? Jack Easterby, most important man in history.
So what's funny about this is, like, in the run of conversation the other day, I was like, yeah, these are Jack Easterby's Texans. Like, I said that. And the reason I said that, though, is because, like, they say similar things. Like, you know, we want to, you know, have players that love football and they're dependable and reliable and they love to be here. You know, and D'Amico, like, references the, you know, God and stuff. And Easterby, of course, did that as well.
CJ.
So, like, I mean, there's a lot of similarities between what Easterby was saying and, like, what the Texans say now. Now, Easterby couldn't, like, you know, evaluate a football player. You're right that he brought over Caserio. But I think that D'Amico is more valuable than Caserio.
Okay.
So I couldn't put – because I don't put Caserio over D'Amico, I can't put Easterby over, you know, the you know, most underappreciated man in Texans football history – because he had nothing to do with D'Amico. Now, you could say that Caserio did, but I disagree. I think that was a McNair hire.
I think that was a McNair one, too. I really think that one was.
So I see where you're coming from, and I don't terribly disagree. Whenever I was talking to my group chat about this the other day, they, you know, roasted me. Mm. Like, you're an idiot. So it's funny that you said that without me having any idea, because I was like, oh, I kind of made the similar case the other day. But I don't – I think D'Amico is – if we're escaping ownership, just going football ops, I would give it to D'Amico.
It's wild that this plan worked out for the Texans. And like now, I root for the team openly.
Did you not in the past?
When the Bill O'Brien Easterby years got really hard to watch and like B.O.B. was just being an a-hole to everybody, it was hard to root for them. I've always rooted for them. Right, since the day they were born, right? Because I was in high school when they were born. So, like, I'm rooting for them, and I want to root for a Houston team. I'm all in now. Obviously, D'Amico, the last 3 years has been great, but it's so fun to see that the plan actually worked out for the Houston Texans. Because it doesn't always work out where you start tanking, we're going to build through the draft, we're going to do this, hire the right coach, draft a quarterback that high, and it works out for the – look, I know it's been a rough stretch for CJ this year, but the first year, it was a historic rookie season.
To your point, like how long have the Jets and Raiders been tanking and drafting quarterbacks?
They tried it
for like 20 years and they haven't got it right.
They've tried everything with the Raiders. They were like, hey, can we get Tom Brady involved? And just we don't even care about the rules that come with a broadcaster being part of a team, talking to other teams on a weekly basis, knowing about their operation. We don't even care about it. We're trying everything. And guess what? It worked out here.
Yeah. You have to have great leadership. Like, I think that's something that we ignore at times, like, especially like coaching jobs. Like, oh, this guy calls a great scheme. Let me hire that guy because he's great at scheming.
Yeah.
I value leadership the most. And I think that's where D'Amico, you know, really takes the cake here. I mean, Caserio hired David Culley and Lovie Smith. Like, I can't look past that, you know.
That's why he's not the most important man.
Analytics has those things out there.
Easterby almost hired McCown.
That's true. If it wasn't for it, I don't feel good about taking this job, right? Like that's what it came down to, was him going, ooh, I don't know if I feel good about this.
Yeah, although, I mean, I also think that those first 2 years with Caserio were like bridge years. Like, I don't think that they were like going out to like, let's find the head coach for our organization.
I don't think they hired Culley to try to win.
I think they were hiring a glorified interim that's rah-rah, keeps the spirits high when they knew they were going to be terrible.
Those 2 years, it was all about, let's start building for the next chapter. Whether it be with the football side, coaches, players, marketing side.
Yeah.
What they've done marketing-wise with the Houston Texans.
Especially with Cal.
It's a case study.
Look at Cal.
Yeah.
Cal went from being, we're not going to watch the Texans until the McNair sell the team, to now he's beloved.
Dude, he was the butt of all jokes. Remember the video game thing? Mm-hmm. Where he was just sitting in his office in his dad's office playing video games. Like, that was that was in the last 5 years. And now this team, the way they branded stuff, the candy paint, red helmets, I'm wearing the sweatshirt, the H-Town made stuff, the mariachi band, everything on game day. Just as a fan, when I go, it's so smooth.
Yeah,
it's affordable. It's easy. Parking still sucks. Getting out of NRG still sucks. And they'll never, it's impossible to solve that.
Most stadiums are that way.
Yeah, like traffic is part of our DNA as well. But they've done a great job. And those 2 years, I forgive them. Those bad years, the Cully years, I'm it's all right. You know what? All is forgiven. Because now we're in an era that could potentially be the best stretch. And when they get to the AFC Championship game, it was all worth it.
Yeah, those were the 100 lost Astros. Like,
yeah.
You had to live those years to go into the golden era. Yeah. You had to
That's a great comparison.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Matt, you're in with Jeremy and Rahil. What's up, Matt?
Hey, brother, I just want to share a couple facts with you. So, been a lot of whoop-de-doo made about the New England Patriots' strength of schedule. So, I decided to do a little research into it. And, yeah, of course, they finished at the bottom of the league in 2025 in strength of schedule. But I dug a little further and found out their strength of schedule is the 10th easiest strength of schedule in the history of the NFL.
What?
Yes, look it up. They're the 10th easiest strength of schedule in the entire history of the NFL. They played four teams this year with 10 wins or more, lost two. Houston played eight, lost four. Houston Texans strength of schedule was somewhere to the, bottom of the first quarter of the league.
Matt, hold on. I hate to cut you off. So what you're saying, you just called in on a drive time show in the city of Houston and called the New England Patriots the A&M Aggies. Wow. The New England Aggies.
Well, if that's
how
you want to look at it. But, yeah, their schedule, I look it up. They're the 10th easiest schedule in the history of the NFL. And then one last thing I'd like to say, I want to keep y'all tied up. It's statistically speaking, the Houston Texans are the best defense since the 2001 Ravens. So look that up as well.
No, I believe that.
It's amazing. Yeah, so statistically speaking, I can't speak. I'm sorry.
Right.
But and then radio. One last thing I'll say, and I'll hang up. Y'all were talking about the Saudi Arabians. I actually worked for them for Saudi Aramco. I thought that was funny. Y'all brought that up a while ago. No. So I'll hang up now and listen, and you guys have a blessed day.
You too, Matt. Thanks, Matt. Matt's full of info. I love it.
Matt's like Hank Hill. Worked for the Saudis. Loves football.
Well, Hank Hill didn't like the Texans, though.
No, he likes the Cowboys.
He was a Cowboys guy. Yeah.
What's the one difference?
And he likes soccer now.
Yeah.
Hank Hill likes soccer now?
You haven't watched a new season?
In the revival, he likes soccer.
Phenomenal.
Why does he like soccer?
You got to watch it.
Because he watched it overseas.
So there's a storyline
involved? Don't give it away, B-Max.
I'm not going to watch it.
Spoiler alert. It's only been 6 months.
He views every cartoon as a kid's thing. Yeah, any animated show he views as a kid's thing.
King of the Hill is.
Beavis and Butthead, that's for kids.
Yeah.
South Park?
For kids. Ooh. Yeah, animations are for kids.
Do not let your kid watch something.
No.
I thought Stranger Things was for kids the other day.
He called it a teeny bopper show.
Do you watch Stranger Things?
I finished it. It was good.
You thought it was pretty good?
It's a teeny bopper
show.
It's nostalgia driven teeny bopper stuff.
Yeah.
With a lot of blood.
Yes. It's not a teeny bopper show.
It is.
Levin's ripping apart.
My take has been verified.
It's a teeny bopper show.
You can be a teeny bopper show in theme and still have those like bloody moments.
What were you watching as a teen?
Teeny Bopper show.
Michael's shaking his head. They don't want to. Admit.
Dude, a
that
bunch
they
of middle schoolers watch
shows.
It.
They don't want to admit it.
Yeah. I know. It's a fun show, but it's. I'm not watching Stranger Things to leave going, wow, what a retrospective look at humanity. I'm watching it going, why is this little skinny boy so obsessed with this average looking, middle schooler? Like, what are we doing here? And they're all like 30 years old now. It's a strange thing.
There you go.
That part's a fact.
I haven't seen a minute of the show, and I nailed it.
No, you did.
Teeny bump.
Nailed it. 713-780 ESPN. We'll get to the calls on the other side. We got some texters too, Rahil, that they have some different opinions on the most important man in Texans history,
of course,
and they're not all men either. 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Rahil, ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2. You looking to escape for the weekend? Maybe get away for a couple of days, get out to some nature, enjoy the great outdoors. Two Creeks Crossing Resort is for you. Go ahead and book your stay now, twocreekscrossingresort.com. But escape the rat race, the hustle and bustle of the job, stress, anxiety, whatever, and get out there to Two Creeks Crossing Resort. Escape the city, enjoy the relaxing, great outdoors. They got the open green spaces for you, wildlife you don't see in the city, beautiful, majestic trees, the great outdoors, some of the best fishing in Texas, too. You got the two creeks that run alongside their property, the big catch and release pond in the middle of the property. You can't beat it. And it's only 90 minutes from Houston. You can escape the city without going too far at Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Hike on their 92 acres of property, play some pickleball on their pickleball courts, maybe some kayaking if that's for you, or just hang out by the pool with a drink whenever the weather warms up, or go to Swampers and have a drink. Glamping, cabins, the treehouse. Pull up the RV. They have the perfect stay for everybody. Right now, 40% off your stays, 20% off your RV stays with the 40-20 discount. That goes on through February, so make sure you take care and take advantage of that. Book your stay now, twocreekscrossingresort.com. That's twocreekscrossingresort.com.
ESPN 97.5. Listening to Jeremy and Joe, live from the Huntington Bank Studios. Here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
No Joe today. Rahil in for Joe. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Gary, you're in with Jeremy and Rahil. What's up, Gary?
Hey, Jeremy, I got to challenge you a little bit, man. I would have needed you to be my statistics professor in college if you'd given Casario a pass for the first 2 years. Like, yeah. Nobody made him hire David Culley. Like, keep in mind, he hired David Culley, who was really terrible. Then, apparently, they wanted to hire Josh McCown, at least reportedly. Then hires Lovie Smith. Like, my thing is, I don't think it's a coincidence that everything got better after he hired DeMeco. From drafting, the overall direction of the franchise. Like, I'm not saying that, you know, he's not important. But most of this, I would put in the hands of DeMeco. Not Casario. He was teetering upon getting fired those first 2 years. Do you remember the press conference where he was basically, you know, saying that if I don't do a good job, I'm going to be out? Like, the first 2 years are solely on him. And when DeMeco came, everything changed. I don't think that's a coincidence.
No, I don't disagree too much. And that's forever going to be a stain on his career. Like, he's the guy who hired David Culley. I think Lovie Smith was just an interim, though.
That was
like,
just a
bridge. He promoted the defensive coordinator from that staff and kept the staff together. So it's just really a difference of opinion on what you think Casario's motives were whenever he first took over. Now, if he didn't, you know, bring DeMeco in and he hires another, you know, Lovie Smith, David Culley type, they're all fired. So I agree with Gary on that sense. It's just a difference of opinion on what the desire was right away. I think Casario knew it was going to be a rebuild. They didn't have a first or second round draft pick. Davis Mills was the first pick that he ever had. The roster was not good. They had like Rex Burkhead, and they're bringing in like Danny Amendola.
That's bad.
Like, their roster was not good, and I think Casario was aware of that. The McCown thing was always weird. I think that I don't know. Like, was that Easterby? Yeah. Like, it's hard to know. Like, what is real? Like, was it a circus? Absolutely, Gary. It was a circus. That first and second year of Casario. Was DeMeco the great stabilizer? Absolutely, he was. Absolutely. But the roster has talent. Like, how much is that DeMeco? How much is that Casario?
Who,
like,
cares? I honestly, it's a good thing that DeMeco came.
Fodder, right, really.
Like. Again, I there's always parallels to business, to life. There are people you work with that will point out your flaws. Maybe D'Amico's that guy. He's like, hey, look, man, you're drafting the wrong type of player. This is what I need.
Yeah.
And you work in tandem and you find out, like, man, this partnership is great. I like working with this guy. He's right.
Yeah.
He called me out on some stuff.
He brings out the best in me.
Brought a different viewpoint as well. Maybe I was seeing things different. I was seeing it in the Patriots lens only. And DeMeco comes in and brings his experiences. And that's all right.
Yeah.
That's okay. So I don't care how we got here. We're just in a three-year stretch where things have gone very, very well. And again, I'm telling you right now, they're going to the AFC title game. And it's going to be here in Houston after on Saturday at 6:30 roughly when the Bills upset the Broncos, and we know that what we're playing for on Sunday. I said we. I don't care. You're not part of the team. You're not part of the team. I don't care. I'm going to say it. I don't care.
You're not but part of the team.
I'm not part of the team. I'm part of the city. I'm part of H-Town.
He hired Cully because he wanted to be on the headsets and wear cleats to practice. That way, they're just kind of weird, which I think he still wears the headsets.
Does he? Yeah. It's just not when you're winning, they don't point out that
I don't
stuff.
Think he's communicating on them, though.
He just wants to know.
I think he's on the headsets. Yeah, because he's kind of a weird GM. And look, like that press conference was weird. Whenever D'Amico was hired, it's like, I'm just, you know, a piece of the pie. I'm just here to help. He was kind of, you know, like, I could be on my way out, but I'm not yet. Like, it was a weird press conference. I'm not disputing that. But he, like, scouts opponents and stuff. Yeah. Like, I don't know how many general managers do that.
He loves football.
Yeah.
He loves it. That's
and he was a coach.
That's his background.
He was a coach, yeah.
He came up, he came through the Patriots organization doing that. So that's part of his legacy. That's what he likes to do, right? Who were the texters saying?
The texters, so they're saying Deshaun Watson. Some people are saying Deshaun Watson.
No.
Hank did root for the Texans because they were AFC and all Texans Super Bowl is apparently what he said, according to somebody. But we had a few junkies, Key from LA, a couple others that said, don't forget about Hannah.
Hannah's very important stabilizing piece.
See, I think Hannah's been very important to the marketing side of it,
yeah.
The PR side of it.
She has.
The, you know, how the organization functions, the branding for sure.
How they're viewed.
Branding her husband.
Yeah.
Like, the Cal branding's unbelievable. So I do think Hannah's done a great job of, like, giving that organization a glam up.
Will you judge me negatively here? Have you listened to the Hannah McNair podcast?
I listened to the first one.
Sisters?
I have.
I listened to the first one to see what like it was going to be about, and that was pretty good. That was like with D'Amico's wife, and like, you know, it's like, you know, what's D'Amico like at home?
That is interesting.
He watches Love Is Blind. Like, that was pretty cool. Like, I thought that was a cool conversation.
The logistics of dinner was fascinating to me.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. I got about a quarter of the way with the sisters. Like, that one started to get. I couldn't finish that one, and I haven't watched another one since. I think it's very weird that an owner has a podcast on the team's YouTube channel, though.
Yeah.
I think it's very odd. Very Stephanie McMahon of her.
She loves the brand.
I think she,
the Hannah brand.
She loves being
the
owner
brand.
Of the NFL.
Yeah.
An NFL owner for sure.
She is her, like, she is a brand.
Yeah.
And it's the Texans and then it's Hannah's brand.
Yeah.
And if you can leverage an NFL brand to help build up your brand and maybe bring back fans to the team, you do it.
For sure.
You're an NFL owner.
She's done a great job. Yeah. Like, do I think that it's kind of weird she has a podcast? Yes. Does it matter?
Everyone
Absolutely
has a podcast.
Not. Yeah. And would I rather? You're right.
Everyone has a podcast. Why not the owner? Like, owner's wife.
Do I want her or Amy Adams Skunk? Like, her.
Ooh.
Do I want her or Ursay's daughter in Indy with the headset on the sideline? Give
Yo,
me Hannah.
Give me that. Give me all of them. Yeah. I want Amy's podcast.
Does she have okay? You Does, want her there, to see, have a podcast? On. I thought you meant as an owner, not as like you want to listen to their podcast.
Do you think she has
she
a podcast?
Amy Adams Skunk? No chance.
Let's see.
No chance she has a podcast. She lives in Houston. Amy Adams does. 713-780-ESPN.
Oh no, she doesn't.
No, she. There's no way she has a podcast. Awesome. No chance she had a podcast. I bet you Ursay's daughter doesn't either. No way.
Does any other owner? Or affiliated to the owner of
I doubt,
the podcast?
I bet you that
there
is.
Jones would,
I don't think that he has one, though.
I know, because he's just on the radio
and maybe,
so much.
Maybe they like repurpose it and put it on their YouTube
no,
or whatever.
No, no, specific podcast.
I bet you. I don't want to say bet because I don't know for sure, but I can't imagine there's another owner in the NFL or an owner's spouse that has a podcast on their team's YouTube channel. It has to be one of its kind.
How about the Earning It podcast? It's not a team owner. But it looks like Roger Goodell's wife has a podcast.
That's interesting.
If I'm, yeah.
Yeah. That
okay.
is interesting.
Earn It. Oh, no. It's produced by iHeartRadio, Sam Rappaport, and Jane Skinner Goodall. I don't know if she's
wife?
On. Yeah. I'm assuming wife.
Yeah. It sounds like it would be his wife.
Let's see.
Not an owner, though. It is weird. Do I care? Not really. 713-780-3776. Let's go back out to the HRMP listener line. El Gordo. You're in with Jeremy
El Gordo.
And what's up, El Gordo?
Oh, hey, sports gentlemen, how you doing?
Wrong show.
I'm sorry. I thought this was a blitz. Hey, ¿cómo estás, Jeremio? ¿Cómo estás? How you doing, sir?
What's up, fatty?
Oh, wait, Raheezy's on this right now?
What's up, brother? You know El Gordo? Do you know him?
I'm not sure.
So he used to be known as La Raza. He
oh, yeah.
Call into the morning show.
Yeah.
Part of the Rijil and Granado experience. And then he put on a lot of weight.
I thought this was a Minority Report. I thought I was talking to an Hispanic guy and an Indian guy.
You are. And I'm not Indian. You know that. But El Gordo, he got so big, so I just started body shaming him into losing weight. And I just call him El Gordo now.
He goes by that now, too.
Yeah.
So he wanted to be...
So look, if you want to look for a sponsor, Rahil is the guy, like motivational stuff. He sends me so many like things to like to make me lose weight, and I'm like, I'm really inspired by it. Like I'm being honest. Like if you want to look for a sponsor, Rahil doing things on Instagram, follow him. Motivational stuff.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. Is that all you got? You got anything else?
So, no. I'm about to spit some real stuff uh-huh. here. Just it. This thing about the Texans and, you know, going into Foxborough and, you know, like the resurrection of the Patriots and stuff, I feel like I like to be the underdog and unnoticed. I like to fly under the radar because the Texans don't get that love, like on national TV. Like, you know, you got your first takes and you got your hot takes or whatever, and then they don't talk about the Texans as they're supposed to. And I love that. I love because they're proving every single person wrong. And I just saw a show. I just saw another show on ESPN. They chose everybody chose the Texans. And I was a little bit concerned about that because, you know, everybody was saying that the Patriots were going to be, they have a top tier defense. They have Drake May, whatever, all this other stuff. I feel like if Texans flying under the radar, I think they can go further than the AFC Championship. Because this defense is like top. This is one of the defenses that we've never seen. Like I don't know, Swarm City, all this other stuff. We got hyped. We're getting there.
Yeah,
you know, like the city is right behind these people.
I agree with the underdogs. I don't like being the underdog. I want to be the top dog, and I want to go in with this attitude that yes, we have a Super Bowl caliber defense. Whatever area of the defense you want to look at, the Texans are set there. You want a great rush? Got you. Lockdown corners? Got you. Dudes flying around, hitting you, injuring people? Got it. All of that stuff. I don't want the underdog stuff. I think Texans fans mm-hmm. need to reframe this mentality of, oh, we're the Texans.
You want to be the alpha.
I want to be the alpha.
You want to walk into the room and own it.
Don't you feel like this team gives you that arrogance and that confidence
defensively,
now?
Defensively,
yeah. Yeah, on defense. Yeah. I don't get it.
I really
what was championships?
Like it does because
offense.
No, because the thing about it is, so we've never been in this position ever in the Texans history.
Yeah.
We always go one and done, and like, but this year, there's so much difference to it. You know, like it feels so close, but yet it's so far. You know what I mean? Like we can taste it, but we know it.
You're gonna taste it, bro.
We've always been underestimated. Houston has always been underappreciated, and that's what I love about the city and this team. It's like they're the dogs, you know. They're like they want to get this and prove everybody.
Yeah.
Once we go to Foxborough and beat the Patriots, because of course Tom Brady was there before, Belichick was there before, but this is not Tom Brady and Belichick. This is Brable and May. So it's a different story now, and it feels so different now.
Yeah, I hear where El Gordo's at. That's for sure.
I feel good, man.
I really don't care about the favorite and the underdog. Like, go win a game.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if you're favored by three, your underdog's by three. I don't care who's picking what. Like, sometimes they're all wrong, sometimes they're all right. Yeah. I don't care. Like, and once the ball's kicked at Gillette Stadium on Sunday, no one's going to remember any of that stuff. No one's going to remember the spread. No one's going to remember who did, Ryan Clark pick, Stephen A. That doesn't matter. It goes out the window the moment the ball's kicked. I think that some of all that preview radio, preview TV, like it's fun.
It's for us.
It's fun and it's good to consume and we'll talk about it and mock it and, certainly, have our fun with it. But once you kick off, it doesn't matter.
I think that does stick with players. Like the being disrespected, like, hey, we've got this great defense. And man, like nobody believes that we can go into New England and win. Although it's not like so many pundits are picking the Texans.
Yeah.
it's just, I think it's the fans. You're right. Like, it's like, what? Who cares?
And I get the fan side of it, too, yeah. where, like, if you're a Houstonian, you're insulted that you don't get the praise or even just the exposure that other teams do because you want that. That's your favorite team. You want to see that exposure.
Yeah.
And I get it. Like, and I don't blame you at all. But I don't think it impacts the game at all. You know what I mean? Like, even the underdog mentality, like, could that have some influence? Like, they're, you know, chip on their shoulder and they don't believe in us. Sure, for a little bit. And then you go get hit. And it's like, okay, it's time to play, you know?
Yeah, but when you get hit and you've got that mentality, and I think this defense has that mentality that, like, hey, they're counting us out on this. When they were 3-5, this team could have folded.
Yeah.
They could have folded, for sure. There's this mentality around the Texans that, no, we're good, man. We got this. Like, I don't care what anybody else is saying. I get that, but we still have to play with this fire, this, like, we got work to do. And we're going to do it. And they've lived up to it. It's so much fun to root for.
I love this defense. This defense is awesome. The defense is fun to watch.
Everything about this team is fun. I know the offense sucks. I know.
The offense frustrates me.
If sucks is frustrating.
Yeah, I think it's mediocre.
I shouldn't have said sucks, but it's frustrating.
Yeah.
And it is literally a mediocre.
Yeah. Every metric, they're mediocre. Yeah.
But man, when you see the signs of this offense, when you need a big play made, even it's been the worst game, guess who makes that play?
That's true.
CJ makes a play. And I'm good with that. I would like him to make more plays.
Mm-hmm. And I think he's capable. I think that's where the frustration's at. Like, I think that he's capable of being far better. 713-780-ESPN. Brian Barrett, he does Off the Pike on the Ringer up there in Massachusetts. He's going to join us next. We'll go beyond enemy lines with Brian Barrett. It's Jeremy and Joe. Rahil in for Joe on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2. I'm hungry. You're probably hungry, too. Maybe you're looking for a drink. Federal American Grill is where you need to head out to. 5 Houston locations, the River Oaks location opening up soon as well. And right now, we're in the middle of social hour. You might be looking at one of those 5 locations of Federal American Grill right now. You might be thirsty. You might be hungry. Well, social hour runs until 7, and it's a great social hour, too. $10 appetizers, various drink specials. The vibes there are very good. They got world-class whiskey and bourbon selection. Sign me up. And while you're there, sign up for the Club Fed, too. It's their rewards point system. Members have early access to all things Federal American Grill. I challenge you to find something on the menu you do not like. I have been unable to do that yet. Great menu. You're going to love it. Stop by for social hour running until 7 every single day. Also, look, Valentine's Day, we're less than a month away from Valentine's Day. Go ahead and book your reservation now, Federal American Grill. $75 for a 3-course dinner. So good. The girlfriend, the fiance, the wife, maybe it's the husband. Maybe you're a female listener. We always put the females at the very top of the list here with Jeremy and Joe. But go ahead and book that reservation now. Do not procrastinate. Federal American Grill, where precision cooking meets quality ingredients and a tribute to classic American cuisine.
ESPN 97.5. Listening to Jeremy and Joe, live from the Huntington Bank Studios. Here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
We go straight out to the HRMP guest line. Brian Barrett, Off the Pike, on the Ringer. Give us an enemy perspective for the game on Sunday. Brian, thank you for joining us. I've seen a lot of the commentary, WEEI, I guess the Sports Hub. I'm not that familiar with the radio stations up there. I see a lot of confidence for the New England Patriots, though, Brian. Why are the Patriots so confident on Sunday?
Well, it is funny because I was just watching NFL Live on ESPN, and every single analyst picked the Texans to beat the Patriots. So I guess maybe the local media is more confident in the Patriots than the national media. But I think the big thing is that the Patriots fans look at right now is the Texans' offense, right? Because everybody looks at the Texans' defense as this unbelievable unit, which it really is. But I think what most Patriots fans think is, they just came off their best defensive performance, and I know it's the Chargers. The Chargers aren't a great offense, but what you looked at from a game plan perspective, it was a lot of blitzing, which they were very successful doing that. And then secondarily, guys, this is the first time really all year they've had a healthy defense. At the beginning of the season, Christian Gonzalez was out, and so he missed the first 3-4 games of the season. And then towards the end of the year, Milton Williams, who was their big ticket item in the offseason, he goes down with an injury. When he goes down, Robert Spillane also goes down, so their run defense kind of suffers. And then all those guys are back on the field. last week, and it's a weak offensive line. I get it with the Chargers, but it's not as if the Texans have the best offensive line either. I think that's the confidence level. It's just the way that the Patriots' defense has played.
Got Brian Barrett here. Brian, what's up? It's Raheel, man. Haven't talked to you in a while. How's life?
I'm doing well, man. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, likewise. Okay, the schedule thing. All right, last segment we had a guy call in and, you know, point out that statistically this is one of the weakest schedules. I called them the New England Aggies, all the jokes, like everything, right? how is that? Like, how bad was the schedule? How much are you weighing that as they get ready for the Houston Texans? And, you know, what are you looking at? Like, what is this team versus this schedule?
Okay, I'll make quick 3 points on this. So the first one is just the fact that it is valid. The schedule was very weak. The best defense they played this season was the Browns. And the Browns had no offense whatsoever. Secondarily, the other portion of the equation is, like, this is such a tiring topic here locally just because of the Stafford versus Drake conversation for the MVP. Like, if you look at the common opponents, Drake was 6-0, Stafford was 4-2, Drake had better numbers. So I feel like I've talked about the schedule for, like, 5 weeks in a row now.
My bad.
But the last portion, but the last portion of that, which I do think is sort of the most important to this game, is, yeah, the Texans are the more battle-tested team. The Texans have played better opponents. They've probably had more impressive wins than the Patriots. But the thing that I would say is, if you're looking at this from a Patriots perspective, what would you rather have? Say, during the season, you played a weak schedule, and you get a home game in the second round of the postseason, and the team you're playing is coming off a short week. So despite the fact that the schedule has not been great, I think the Patriots are in a better spot because of those things, that they get to play at home and they have the rest advantage and they're the healthier team. So, yeah, the schedule was easier for the Patriots, but they've really taken advantage of it all year long.
Brian Barrett joining us on the HR&P guest line. What's been the biggest difference between Drake May's first year and second year?
A competent coaching staff is probably the biggest thing. I mean, Gerard Mayo could not run his nose, unfortunately. You had an offensive coordinator last year, Jeremy, in Alex Van Pelt, that literally publicly said he doesn't believe in design runs from the quarterback. He said that before games. So the opponent knew, hey, even though this Drake May guy is a really good athlete, they're not going to run. He was literally saying that. So Josh McDaniels, who, say what you want, as a head coach, obviously did not have much success. He has been a solid offensive coordinator. And then Mike Vrabel comes in, stabilizes the rest of this. Now, the Patriots' offensive line is not great, but at least they put in resources into it, right? They did not perform well against the Chargers, but they drafted a left tackle early on in the draft. They drafted a guard in the third round. They went out, and Morgan Moses thought that he's the best lineman of all time, but they signed him in free agency. They picked up a center in Bradbury in free agency. The only leftover lineman from last year is on Wenyu. So that's been big, that they at least emphasize that, hey, we got to protect this quarterback. And then the last thing is just Drake himself. It's wild to see how accurate he's been this season compared to where he was a year ago. Some of it is footwork. Some of it is just more of a sort of a better relationship with the weapons that he has, but not that he had a bad relationship, just the synergy with these guys has been much better. But if you look at some of the advanced numbers, Next Gen does completion percentage over expectation. His completion percentage over expectation is 9.1 percentage points higher than it is supposed to be, and the closest guy to him is Brock Purdy at 5.1. The gap between Brock Purdy at 2 is Matthew Stafford at 16 is wider than Drake May in Brock Purdy. It's just like every time he throws the ball down the field, like, we were shocked last week when he has Austin Hooper open for a touchdown and he misses him, because it just so rarely happens. Yeah. He throws the deep ball like as accurate as I've seen in recent NFL history.
And that's where I'm confused. This is one of the themes that we've been talking about, like, which stretch of games, which stretch of throws is the real team, the real person. And there were moments in that Chargers game where you're like, ooh, okay, maybe it's the playoffs. Maybe it's just the pressure of it. In that Bills game, going back to that, he was unreal in the first half. Second half, couldn't get anything going. So which stretch is the real stretch of Drake May?
Yeah, I think if you go back to the game last week, to jump on that one first, is the first half, I would not dispute it. He was very shaky. He missed things that he ordinarily doesn't. And I do think, to give the Chargers some credit here, I know Jesse Minter is going to get some interviews for head coaching opportunities. They did a good job disguising what they were doing, and Drake was sort of confused in the first half of that game. Now, the good thing for Drake is he does have the ability with his legs, where he set up a field goal, but they got the ball back with like a minute left, and he scrambled for 37 yards to set up a field goal. But from a passing perspective, he was not good in the first half. In the second half, it looked like Drake again, where he's 11 of 14, and he has a passer rating of 142. With the Bills game specifically, it was kind of crazy because that was the first game that they unleashed Drake design runs because they were blowing out some of these inferior opponents going back to the schedule. But finally, like in the red zone, two consecutive drives for the Patriots, he ran for touchdowns. And we hadn't really seen that much from Josh McDaniels calling those types of plays in the red zone this year, which the Patriots have struggled with the red zone at times. So I'd expect them to go back to that in this game on Sunday. But in the second half of that game against the Bills, and I know this is going to sound like a cop-out, but it really wasn't about Drake. Mm. Like, it was the Bills just said, hey, we're going to play man-to-man defense, and that's not a great Bills defense. And the Patriots receivers just didn't get open. Like, they were not open. Drake had plenty of time in that game to sort of find receivers, but the receivers really never came open. So that's the scary thing about the Patriots in this game against the Texans is, like, this is clearly going to be the best defense Drake may have faced by far in his career. He's coming off a performance where he felt better about it in the second half. But I do think the one difference between the Texans and the Chargers, obviously the Texans have a superior defense. They don't do a lot of stuff. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, guys. They kind of play straight up, right? Like, I don't think there's going to be a lot of confusion on Drake then like we saw in the first half against the Chargers.
I think they're pretty simple with what they show you and then kind of adjust based on what they see offensively. But, no, they do get that stereotype that they're very simple, do what they do really well, don't really mix it up a whole lot and aren't very complex.
Yeah. So, I mean, that would be better for Drake. And the one other thing I'd say about that is just Stephon Diggs, who, of course, you guys know well, he did not play particularly well in the game last week. I mean, he only had two receptions, had a drop in that game, and a lot of us said the over on receiving yards that did not come through for us, which is very unfortunate considering Diggs' postseason resume is, like, outstanding. He has been incredible in the postseason. He had a poor game, and I do think he's going to be massive in this game just because the Texans, of course, do play a lot of zone, and Diggs has been really good all season long, finding sort of the soft spots in the zone. But the other thing to me in this game is like the running backs, because Ramondre Stevenson has been really, like, it's kind of crazy to say this, but like the last half of the season, or I should say the second portion of the season, he's played like a top five running back. Now, I'm not telling you that I think he's a top five running back in the NFL, but if you look at some of the numbers, like where he finished this year, he's first in rush yards over expectation, and he's third in yards after contact per attempt behind guys like Achane and Bijan Robinson. So he's been incredible for the team. He's been really reliable in the passing game. He was their leading receiver last week, and I think with the pressure that the Texans bring, Ramondre and Travion Henderson in the pass game, I think that's going to be imperative for the Patriots to have success is to use those backs because those guys can make big plays. Like Travion Henderson, he was tied for fourth in the NFL in yards per attempt, but the thing about him is he's a big play waiting to happen. So they are going to, like, because you can't move the ball, as you guys know, against the Texans methodically. They're going to need some big plays, and I think it may come. Maybe Drake gets him over the top once, but I think there's going to be one play of this game where Travion Henderson sort of busts out a big run because we've seen him do it all season long.
Yeah, that's the area that I'd be very mindful of as well. Brian, appreciate the information. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll catch up down the road.
All right, fellas, enjoy the game.
Brian Barrett, the great Brian Barrett, off the pike on the Ringer. He's got me pinned on his Twitter, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
That's why I'm a big Twitter guy.
I gotta see that. Hold on.
I did his podcast with him yesterday. He needed a Houston perspective. I was like, I mean, I guess I was your seventh or eighth ask. The other seven told him no.
It's like, why would you ask me, no?
Brian? I was like, Brian, who said no before you asked me? Well, I'm the last guy you should ask.
I love that.
Kyle Tucker signed a big contract with the Dodgers last night. How do you fix baseball? How are we going to fix baseball? And how long is there going to be no baseball because of this and other things? 713-780-3776. Rahil in for Joe. Jeremy and Rahil, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 97.9 HD2.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with Jeremy and Joe, broadcasting live from inside the Huntington Bank Studios
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Kyle Tucker's a Dodger, Rahil. Rahil in for Joe George. This junkie says baseball is Rahil's favorite sport.
Junkie?
What's the story behind that?
I hate baseball.
You hate baseball?
Yeah. I've never... I'll be like, this past season, I'm going to say I watched maybe 6 complete Astros games live. I watch condensed games. I have the MLB app.
MLB does a good job with their condensed games.
I love the condensed games.
12 minutes.
And then even on YouTube, there's content creators that will do better condensed games.
Really?
And like they put their own little thoughts in there. I'll get, like, there's one in Houston. I forgot the guy's name because he just pops up on my account. I don't know his name. But that, like, I just watch condensed games. I haven't watched a full non-Astros game in years.
Okay.
Including the World Series.
Wow.
I'm talking like, hey, I'm so intrigued about Game 7 of the Dodgers taking on the Blue Jays, which I should have an interest in because I hate the Dodgers. My nephews live in Toronto. I want them to see the Blue Jays win. I watched this, the last few innings. So I think baseball has done such a terrible job of making their product intriguing for non-market fans.
Yeah, I don't really disagree with that. I love baseball.
Okay.
I love baseball, but I don't disagree with the marketing point of view. I think they've had terrible leadership for a long time.
Yeah.
Not it goes beyond Manfred. I think Seedlick was a terrible leader too.
Did you watch any non-Astros games this year? Like, you were just like, man, no. I got to watch the Pirates take on...
I watched some of the playoffs.
Give me a team.
I watched some of the World Series. I watched a lot of the World Series.
Okay.
I watched a lot of the... But not start to finish.
Not
like,
start
I'll turn
to,
it on yeah. whenever like we're done watching our shows. Okay, it's the seventh. I'll catch the end. But no, I watch every Astros game live.
Yeah.
Not just the condensed. But then another baseball game outside of the Astros? No.
How many NFL games did you watch
non-Texans? Every one I can.
Right?
I tried to watch every NFL game this year.
How many NBA games?
I didn't get that successful with it. None.
None so far.
Until the playoffs. I won't watch NBA until the playoffs.
The NBA, the reason I'm asking you about the NBA, because you would really have to go out of your schedule because you're working.
Right.
Right, not only this show, you're doing play-by-play, to really like be intrigued to watch the Thunder take on the Spurs.
Right.
I was glued to Thunder Spurs. I was like, oh, I want to see this matchup again. I think it was the fifth time they played already.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's been a while. Like because they play so much now with the Cup and all that stuff, right? So I was like, oh, I need to watch this game. I haven't done that for a baseball game, I want to say, in years.
Maybe a World Series game for me. Yeah. No, I agree with you on that. Yeah, I'll turn on an NBA game if like I'm at the hotel and like, hey, that's an intriguing matchup, a late TNT game, something like that. But very, very rarely.
So that's not why baseball is not dying, because Tucker signed with the Dodgers. It will die.
Well, a lot of people
it could be one of
the
reasons.
A lot of people hate the fact that, I mean, the salary difference between what the Dodgers are doing and any other team in baseball is crazy. And then you have the whole, like, this is the final year of the CBA. Mm-hmm. The players' union is strong. There's thought that the owners and the commissioner are going to want to try to put a cap on it somehow, because there's this like crazy difference between the Dodgers and big markets. Even the Dodgers, it's like Dodgers, big markets, everybody else.
Do you see what the difference is between the Dodgers and number two, according to SpotTrack?
Like $100 million.
It's no, $1 billion.
SpotTrack.
SpotTrack. That's
I know
what I said.
Said
yeah.
Right, but I used
so
to say SpotTrack.
Guaranteed contract. This is directly from SpotTrack. Guaranteed contracts for 2026 for Dodgers on the hook for $2.1 billion. San Diego's on the hook for $1.2 billion.
Oh, wow.
Literally
guaranteed,
a billion
money in the future.
Yeah. Almost $1 billion difference for guaranteed contract currently on the books.
Yeah, the AAV, like the Dodgers, their projected payroll for next year is $413 million. Which is 96 more than the second place Mets at 313.
They have like eight players on their roster with contracts over 100 million.
And I don't blame the Dodgers, by
eight.
The way. Like, hey, if I were a Dodger fan, I would love this, right? Like, and I think Shohei Ohtani is a boost of a ton of revenue, because now they're already in LA, so they're already getting tons of money from like their local TV deals. And then now by the way, they have all of Japan.
I'm going looking at, because in the 98 to 2001 span with the Yankees, that was the big thing.
Sure.
Right? The Yankees are just buying championships. They're just spending so much more. So let's take a look at this number. The Yankees payroll was $109 million. The bottom team was the Minnesota Twins, $24
million. Yeah.
That's part of baseball. It's always been that.
I've always felt there should be a salary floor. I've always been more for a salary floor than against a salary cap.
I would agree that it's always been this way, but I feel like it's more exaggerated now.
Just because the Dodgers are winning.
There was always been a gap between the haves and the nots, but I feel like the haves have increased even more than they had in the past.
See, I remember in the Yankees run when they were winning titles, when they were in the World Series, right? It was the same conversation. Like, they're spending way more than any other team, of course, and it just you feel helpless.
It's like you're playing two different sports.
But take away the bottom, because again, the bottom teams have always been poor in spending, right? They just would not spend money.
Yeah.
I think floor would be great. Like, dude, you got to spend, come on, get up to $60 million at least. Mm-hmm. But even with that, the World Series came down to the final inning and just a ridiculous play. The regular season, it's not like the Dodgers ran away with it. It was a three-game difference. So even with all this spending, it's still pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Right?
I think baseball's a coin flip sport anyways.
Yeah.
Like, the best team isn't always going to win. Like, it's different, I think, in football, maybe even basketball, where, like, the talent difference is going to show. Baseball, I mean, you have a bad pitching performance, and the other team's going to win.
Yeah, you know? And you, money doesn't control that. Right? Uh-huh. You can spend all the money you want. And, look, the Yankees, they're spending how much money in the last 5 years? What have they done? So I get the frustration with the Dodgers. Like, oh, really? Like, Kyle Tucker? You just added Kyle Tucker to the championship
roster?
They've
been pulling him for years.
Do you see the number they'll be paying Kyle Tucker when you include the luxury tax?
Yeah. How much?
$124 a year.
Woo.
See, my big deal, I don't know if I want a salary cap in baseball. I think the owners do. I think Manfred does. I think it's probably going to lock out the sport for probably a long time.
Good. Just go to the playoffs. Skip the whole regular season.
My issue is the deferred money. Like, they can defer this money, which is fine. Like, if you want to defer the money and Tucker's like, yeah, I'm cool getting paid in 20 years, fine. But I think that the AAV should be the 100%.
That, like, should count.
It should count this year. You shouldn't get a discount on the AAV because you're deferring the money. I feel like that's kind of, and I know everybody can do it. It feels dirty to me.
Yeah. I guess that's always been the charm of baseball, right? Like, as long as I've been watching sports, it's always been, there's no salary cap. You spend money, you win, all that. But you got to put some kind of rule in place because it isn't fun for the bottom teams, as you've been mentioning. Like, what are those are there fans there still?
Yeah, like, what? I mean, Pittsburgh. Like, does a Pittsburgh Pirate fan exist?
They do, but they don't really care. They just they collect the money. They collect the revenue share. They profit. They're cool with it because their owners want
to
make money.
And they're waiting for the evaluation to rise, and then they'll sell the team, and somebody else will come over. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the other. This is corporate greed has also ruined sports, right?
That's probably a bigger picture for sure.
That, like, across the board, corporate greed has taken fans out. But I'm not blaming the Dodgers. Astros,
it's not their fault.
They're top five. They were, at least, for the last 5 years or roughly. More than that, even.
Yeah, they spend money. The ballpark. Yeah. I mean, not in the ballpark, I should say. I guess top five.
Yeah,
they're not in the ballpark, but.
Yeah, they load up, too. So, like, if your ownership's not doing it, that sucks for you.
Right. I'm fascinated to see what the whole negotiation between baseball and the player union is going to look
I'm curious.
It's got to be on the salary cap, right?
I think it's going to get ugly. There's no way in my mind they agree to a salary cap.
Well, the question I thought this was where you were going is, like, if baseball gets a salary cap, that I think that means the players would get a major concession on their end.
It would have to.
Right. But so the question is, what would that be?
Yeah, I don't know what that concession is.
I don't either.
Have everything they need.
Some people would say, like, don't let them allow them to get to free agency sooner.
Maybe.
But that doesn't help the veterans.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't help the guys who've been in the league for 10 years.
And you're going to tell the veterans, like, hey, do this for the future generation.
Usually in those, like, CBAs, you're not really looking out for the young player.
No.
So it's going to be, if you're, like, into, like, legal stuff, like, it's going to be insane.
That's where we're going to get Mike Meltzer on
Probably. I don't think they get to a salary cap. I think they're too far away from a salary cap to get to a salary cap.
Even if they got to a salary cap, are you gonna grandfather in all these like teams like the Dodgers? Like, when would it actually kick in and mean anything?
I think they're gonna spike up the tax and maybe do something about the deferrals. Still allow the deferrals, but you have to at least count it on your luxury tax payroll right away.
I think it should be count it, and you have to pay out by the end of the next presidency. So we'll give you, depending on when that player is signed, like, if you sign him in a midterm year, then you get 6 years to pay this off, man.
You got to be selective on when you're signing these big players.
Then you're going to have these Major League Baseball teams are becoming lobbyists to keep the current president in the office. Like, we need another term.
Yeah, if you get a guy, because next year, we don't know. Maybe President Trump is like, yo, I'm going to run again. What y'all going to do about it? But whoever that next president is and they sign a deal, then you get 8 years. But then if he sucks, you only have 4 years.
That's not a bad idea. That'd be fun.
I don't know. I'm
correlating politics with the
I love it.
What?
America's pastime. I love it.
What about relegation? in baseball.
The teams would never sign off to it. I kind of have it already. I love relegation in every sport.
I think that would be the best thing.
If I could like just be the creator of all sports and like, you know, wipe everything from the world, come back as the creator of all sports, I would have relegation in every sport.
I'm with you.
It'd be so much fun.
You would have to spend money. You can't, unless you just want to be tier two. You want to be part of the MILB, then that's cool, man.
Like, see ya.
Cool, make your money there. But if you want to play with the big boys, you're going to have to spend a little bit more money than $24 million a year.
Yeah, I love that idea. Bad Take Boulevard, whenever we come back. Rahil in for Joe, Jeremy and Rahil, ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2. Only eight cities still have football playoffs. Isn't that great? And Underdog's the best place to get in on all the football action during the playoffs. You can make picks and win money right now in Texas. So easy playing on Underdog. All you have to do is pick whether your favorite players or go higher or lower on a bunch of different stats. Every stat you can think of, they have it. Touchdowns, rushing yards, receptions, fantasy points even, and get them all right, and you can win up to 5,000 times your cash. Underdog's also, they're always taking care of you. Last week, we talked about this freebie wild card quarterback pick. They're doing it again for the divisional round. You can do a gimme pick on any quarterback right now. Profit boost going on. I used my gimme pick on CJ Stroud. I didn't know which direction I wanted to go there. I didn't know if I liked the higher or lower 220.5 passing plus rushing yards. Didn't know what to do there, so I went the gimme pick. Get it for free. And then Drake May, I went higher than 35.5 rushing yards. I think the Texans can get beat a little bit with quarterback scrambles, especially the way that Drake May escapes out of the middle. So give me Drake May higher than 35.5 rushing yards on that. You might think I'm an idiot. You might want to follow that. You might want to make your own picks. Do it now on Underdog. What are you waiting for? Download the Underdog app right now. Use promo code KILLERB to score $75 in bonus entries when you play your first $5. Promo code KILLERB, K-I-L-L-E-R-B. Underdog, make picks, win money.
Must be 18 or older and present in Texas. Terms apply. See assets.underdogfantasy.com/web/play and get terms underscore DFS underscore .html for details. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit ncpgambling.org.
This is ESPN 97.5, brought to you by Zadok Jewelers.
KFNC 97.9 HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston, a Gal Media station.